All right, so we are holding on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, second line. Mishnah said, "V'loyis atraklin kolo." We mentioned a variety of things in the Mishnah where, if it's not large enough to split it among two people, meaning each one of them is going to get one, or they're going to get portions that are not large enough to have the original name of the thing. It's too small to be used for its original function. Then we said one of them can't force the other one to divide it. So the question is, ein behen kedei lazeh v'kedei lazeh mahu. Fine. So what happens, though, let's say, so the thing is not large enough for each of them to have a share large enough to be considered a valid piece. However, is there another alternative? Rav Yehuda amar is dinet good or agud. So Rav Yehuda says, yes, you can have you apply there the din of good or agud. Good, Rashi explains, comes from a word that in Aramaic means to cut. So it's similar to the word kites in Hebrew. In Hebrew, you say to fix the price. No, that would be a different kind of good. That's the Rabbi Hanan will understand it that way. That means good, meloshin, to pull.
Okay.
Meaning, according to him, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings in his notes over here from Rabbi Hanan in Nida, that according to him, it means you pull or I pull. Meaning, in other words, either you pay me for my portion and you pull it away, and you pull it then away from me, or I'll pay you for your portion and I'll pull it away from you. According to Rashi, it's not pulling, though. It's rather you fix either you fix a price and you buy my portion for that price, or I'll fix a price and I'll buy your portion after
so
that.
So according to Rashi, it's a different word.
It's a different word, exactly.
Than in Arabic.
Right. Okay. According to Rashi, it would be a shardish that means to cut. For example, you have it in Tanakh, for example, in Daniel, and yet again in that dream of Nebuchadnezzar with the tree where he sees a malach coming down from Shemayim and saying, Goidu Ilana, cut down the tree. So you see, there's the shardish good, goid, whatever, could mean to cut. But also, the Medrash brings, for example, that God, the Shevet God, was born already circumcised. He was born with a bris milah.
Wow.
Thus, we learn that from the fact that Leah said, "Bogod," that God, meaning cutting, has come. He's born already with his bris milah, with his ala cut off.
She knew it was coming, or
no? When he was born and she looked at him for the first time, she realized, "Hey, he doesn't have his ala is already cut off." Bogod. Okay, so we see that the shirish God means to cut off. All right. Anyway,
what's the meaning of that?
That's the meaning. It means he was on a higher level. But anyway. The point is, either according to Rashi or according to Rabbi Hanan, it amounts to saying that I want out of the shurfus, one of us is going to buy the other one out. Tosfos wants to say, the Re says in Tosfos, that maybe even the person can overvalue it a lot. He can say, for example, you know, my portion maybe in reality it's only worth $100, but I'm going to demand $1,000 for it, for example, and then if you want to buy it from me. The Ritzva and Tosfos argues with that. Then what happens, for example, one of them is rich and one of them is poor. Let's say the rich guy is always going to be able to force the issue. He can afford to pay that. The other guy can't. So therefore, he says that, no, you'd need to value it according to its fair market value. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says you have that concept. Rabbi Nachman Amalestina de Gudei Ogud. Rabbi Nachman says you don't have that concept. The other one can say, I don't want to buy yours. I don't want to sell mine. We'll remain shutfin. You don't want to remain shutfin with me? Tough luck. It's not big enough for us to divide. Amalei Rava Lo Rav Nachman. Lidi Doch to Amrit Less Dina De Good Ay Ogud. Now, Rava says to Rav Nachman, you're saying there's no Dina of Good Ay Ogud. According to you, then, B'chor Pasho She'niach Lein Avi An Eved Or Behemoth Tmeah. Suppose you have two brothers, a B'chor and a regular brother. So the B'chor, as usual, gets twice the share of the regular brother. Suppose their father left them behind an Eved or a Treif animal, which is something you can't really divide. Maybe if it was a kosher animal, for example, fine. You could divide it and divide the meat. One gets two-thirds, one gets one-third.
I bet you can.
And evidently, that's what we're going to answer in time, but Rava is assuming that you can't do that, but for reasons which we'll discuss in a second. So, case at Oisin, how should they do it? According to you, if there's no Mela, if you say good or good, fine. One can buy out the other one's share, and then he has the whole Eved or the whole Behemoth Mea for himself. But if you say that not, then how? Now, why are we mentioning specifically Bechor and Poshut? Wouldn't the same thing apply if it was two Pshutim as well? So Rashi says because it would be more of a bother to be Shutfim in it. The question is why? Why would it be more of a bother? There's a few different explanations. Tosfos says one reason is, let's say, for example, so fine, let's say we're to say that we're going to divide it in terms of days. The Bechor is going to be entitled to it for 2 days, and then the Poshut for 1 day. Now, you could have, for example, the Bechor is going to gain more from it than he rightly should. Let's say, for example, you have a place a round trip of 2 days, which is going to take a place which is a round trip of 2 days away, where you can go and buy merchandise cheaply and sell it more and sell it at a profit. The Bechor would be able to do that because he has the animal for 2 days at a time. The Pasha is not going to be able to do that. Therefore, the Bechor is going to end up with more than he should.
Rava
is arguing that doesn't seem to be a fair way of doing it.
Four versus two.
If they agree, but if they don't agree, then it's, yeah. But if they don't agree, yeah. Anyway, that's one explanation. There's other explanations. Tosfos brings up a matter, and the Rama talks about it in more detail. That we're talking about you can have a matter of you rent out the thing and you split the profits of it. But the rental would not be something that the Bechor gets a double portion of. He doesn't get from Roy like he does from Muchta, because we'll learn the details later on the Sefer. He only gets a double portion of the Nechotim as they existed at the time their father died. Therefore, it's going to come out. He's going to only get half of the Schar instead of two-thirds of it, and that it's not fair to him. Okay. Whatever it is. So Rava is asking, so if you don't say good or good, what are you going to do? Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, okay, nevertheless, Shani Omer, Ovel Azayim Echad, Velazesh Shneyamin. Nevertheless, that's what they'll do. The animal or the Eved will work for one of them for 2 days and the other one for 1 day. It's not going to be perfectly fair according to these things. Nope. Okay, but basically it's going to end. Meister, the Gemara says, okay, but I have a contradiction, though. A Braisa says, we've learned this a few times, an Aedius, if you have a person who's half Eved and half Shvi, which we learned in Gittin, you have one possibility where he bought half of himself out, another possibility where he had two masters and one of them freed him. Anyway, so he's half Eved Knani, that is, half Ben Chorin. So Basilo says then, okay, from now on he works for his master for 1 day and for himself for 1 day, and he alternates back and forth like that. But Shammai says that's no good. Tikantem es Rabba, fine. You fixed up things for his master. His master is going to get half the work out of him that he did before because he still owns half of him. Very good. But es Atzmi le Tikantem. But how are you fixing things up for this Eved? Lissa Shivcha in a Yochel. He's not able to marry a Shivcha because he's half Ben Chorin. As a Ben Chorin, he's already a Yisrael. The Yisrael is not allowed to marry a Shivcha. Lissa Bas Chorin in a Yochel. He can't marry a Bas Chorin either because half of him is an Eved. You bottle? Should he just be bottle and not be married and not have children? But the whole world was only created for the sake of Peruahu. As the Pasuk says, the Eibishter did not create the world for futility. He made it in order to be inhabited. So Tosfos points out, that's the thing. Even an Eved, for example, even it's true, an Eved is not technically going to be Mekayim Peruahu anyway, because we learned in Yevamos, Eved they Mekayim, his children are not Miyuchas after him. Nonetheless, though, we still want to make the possibility. So that's one of the reasons Tosfos says, as Tosfos discusses at some length over here, why we don't mention Peruahu, why we mention the Pasuk Torah Bra, which is from Nevi'im. But the bottom line is, we're saying he may not be able to be Mekayim in the midst of Peruahu, and as half an Eved, maybe he's not obligated to, but at least Mitzad L'Shavet Yitzara, even he is obligated to be able to have children, even if they're not Miyuchas after him, he's not going to be technically Mekayim in the midst of it with it, but he's populating the world, which is important.
But an Eved is, as far as the mitzvah to say go, I thought Eved is a Teisa, and Isha had no mitzvah to...
Approve.
Right.
Right, that's another thing, right. So that's why we're not mentioning all that. We're just mentioning that it's true that an Eved has the mitzvah of an Isha. If he were a full-fledged Eved Knani, he anyway wouldn't have the mitzvah Approve, because a woman doesn't have the mitzvah Approve anyway, as we learned in Yevamos. True. I mean, now he's half been hurt. That half of him has the mitzvah, but anyway...
But as a man, he's not an Isha, and he still has that obligation.
No, but the point is, Yisrael's point was that if he was a full-fledged Eved, we wouldn't say he has the mitzvah of Peruahu. Right. So, but now that he's half Ben Chorin, right. Now that he's half Ben Chorin, yeah. So therefore, Rav Shammai says that's no good. Ela koifenes rabbi. No, what you have to do is you have to force his master, who owns the other half of him, to free him. We make him free. And then what the Eved does is he writes a shtar, since he doesn't have the money right now, he writes a shtar that he will owe that half of the money to his master. But meanwhile, he frees him right away, and that way he'll be able to marry a Bas Chorin. His master is obligated to free him. Tosfos has another long discussion of it about how you're allowed to do that. L'chora, you're not allowed to free an Eved, but it boils down to that here, because it's an important point, because L'shevet Yitzara is called a mitzvah rabba, it's a great important mitzvah, mm-hmm. Therefore we obligate the master to free him. And Beis Hillel wound up agreeing to Beit Shammai. That's why this is a Mishnah Adias, by the way. Adias has the various cases, including the various unusual cases where Bittul ended up conceding to Beit Shammai, or Beit Shammai is made for a Bittul was Machmir, or whatever. This is one of the ones where Bittul ended up conceding to Beit Shammai. Anyway, okay, so the point is that we're not going to say, in other words, that we're saying if it weren't for the question of Piri V'Rivya, if it weren't for the fact that this Eved has to be able to be Mekayim L'Shevet Tzara or Puru or whatever, we wouldn't say that we force the master to free him. Why doesn't the Eved have the ability to say Gudai Ogud? You're telling me, Rav Yehuda, that there's a din of Gudai Ogud L'Chora from this Mishnah, you see that there is not. How would it apply? The Eved should be able to say, let's fix a price. And I'll buy out the half that you still own of me. We'll fix the price. I'll pay you for it. And then that's that. We don't seem to do that. Which Tosus points out that
you said before that it could buy himself out.
But that's what we're saying in this mission, we don't seem to be saying that. The only reason, in other words, before Beit Hillel conceded to Beit Shammai, they weren't saying Gudai Ogud. They were saying let's leave it indefinitely like this. Beit Shammai is pointing out to them you have a problem with Puri V'Rivya. Now Tosus points out the fact of the matter is here we don't have the Eved actually paying for it cash on the barrel. He's just writing the cash on the barrel. He's just writing out a shtar. The point is, though, from the wording that Beit Shammai is using, that there's no takana for him, it sounds like even if he actually had the money available, it wouldn't. Beit Hillel seems to be saying that they wouldn't allow it. Now, why not? What happened to Gudai Ogud? The answer is shiny hachadu.
But an Eved could always buy himself out.
But that's what we're saying. According to
Mishnah, doesn't seem to accept that.
That's the thing. According to Beit Hillel, the Eved does not have the right to force the master to say, that's what we're asking. If Gudai Ogud, then he should have that right. The answer is shiny hachad ogud ikka good leka. Yes, but the difference is over here, it's only a one-sided thing. The Eved can buy his half, the guy can buy out the half of himself that's an Eved from the master. But you can't do the other way around. You can't say that you buy the half of me, which is already a Ben Churin, and make me back into an Eved Knani. He can't become an Eved Knani. He can't even actually, even making him back into an Eved Ivri won't help, because it still won't be a permanent thing. He's only an Eved Ivri for 6 years, besides which other Rishonim point out anyway, we looked at Kedushin, that a Ger can't be, in this case, an Eved Meshuchra is like a Ger in that sense, can't be sold as an Eved Ivri anyway. So therefore, it's only a one-sided thing. The only possibility is, Ogud, I will buy out the half from you. There's no possibility of good. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda might say, and that
cannot be can't,
exactly, that's the point. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda might say, that's different. In that case, then we wouldn't say good or ogur, because you don't have both possibilities. But in a case, let's say, of a chotzer that they own jointly, or a field, or what have you, where either one of them can buy out the part from the other, Rabbi Yehuda would say that's different.
What were you saying about Tosfos and the next about
this? That Tosfos says, Tosfos points out, on the face of it, isn't there a difference over here? Maybe you could argue that if the Eved was actually ready to pay right now cash, to put down cash to free himself, maybe the master would be obligated to accept it. Maybe only because we're only writing a shtar over here are we saying it's only the Tikkun Olam that we have to. But Tosfos says, the Lashon of Beit Shammai saying that, which seems to be saying that Yivtal, that what is he saying? Stuck like this, if you don't, it sounds like even if he actually has the money right now, then it's still not. The Rashba, by the way, has a different explanation of this last point of the question and of the answer. He says the question isn't on Rabbi Huda, the question is on Rava, who asks Rav Nachman that if you have an Eved or Behemoth Tmeya, how are Bechor or Parshat supposed to split it? Why doesn't Rava think that you can split it by days? We see from this Mishnah that you can. And the answer is because of the difference in the Mishnah over here. Since you only have the one possibility of Ogud, not of good, therefore, before Beit Hillel ended up conceding to Beit Shammai, they said in that case, there's no other way to do it but to split it by days. But not necessarily that you'd say that by a regular case.
Rava's question only applies to a half Eved?
No, Rava's question was about a full Eved. You know, a full Eved that a Bechor and a Parshat together. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Because they should be able to.
So that's the thing. Rava assumed that you can't just split it by days for the reason that we said before, and I'm not going to tell them, nevertheless, you split it by days.
Even
if it's not completely fair. Tashma, come, let's prove from another case. A braita says, Shnei Achen, if you have two brothers, Echad Oni ve'Echad Oshu, one is poor, one is rich, V'niachlein Abiyan Merchot Beit Abad, their father left over to them for example, a bathhouse or an olive press. So, Asa on the Schar, if he made them for Schar, most Rishonim learn it doesn't necessarily mean that the father made them for Schar. In other words, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that Rambam learns it this way, that it means how did the father, what did he use them for when he was alive? Did he use it to rent out or did he use it for himself? Most other Rishonim learn that it just means, is it something that's capable of being rented out? Is it something that's capable, you're capable of, it's something where you could find people who will be willing to rent it.
It's said for Shabbos. And the thing we spoke about in Irving also, that you can rent a Beis Hamavad.
But not necessarily. You may have a particular Beis Hamavad that nobody wants to rent for whatever reason. It's not well looked. That's what we mean. So in that case, fine. They rent it out, and the profits from the rental are split equally. That's not a chiddush. The chiddush is the next part. What happens if it was made for his own use? Again, according to the Rambam, it literally means the father always used it for himself. According to most other Rishonim, it means that it's something where you're not able to find anybody to rent it with. So therefore, they're going to have to use it themselves if it's going to generate any income at all. Well then, the rich brother can say to the poor brother, it's fine. If you want to go and purchase for yourself avadim, and who will warm up the bathhouse, and you'll be able to bathe in it, then fine. We'll go bring olives, and you can go and press them in the press of you. Meaning, we don't see that the oni can say, look, I can't afford that, therefore good, you buy out my share, or I'll buy out yours. Why not? The answer is Hasam Nami, good ikka or good leka. Same problem. It's only a one-sided thing. The usher can say to the oni, I will buy out your portion. You fix the price and I'll buy it out for you. The oni doesn't have the ability to say the opposite. He can't afford to be able to buy out the usher's half. Therefore, Rav Yehuda could say, fine, in that case, you don't apply good or good. Doesn't mean necessarily that in a case where either one is possible, where either one could afford it, that you shouldn't do that.
He could say, even if he doesn't have the money to buy it out, he could say he's going to lease it to his brother, and with the money that he accumulates, then he's going to buy it out over some time. That he could say.
But the other brother can say, I don't want to lease it from you.
Well, that's the difference.
Yeah, I don't want to have to pay. Look, we inherited it jointly from our father. Yeah. The choices are, we can each use it, each in our own time, each on our own day or whatever. I can use it. I can afford avodim to heat up the bathhouse or whatever. If you can, also fine. If not, then it's not my problem.
So what does he do? He just chooses.
So then the usher would be, you'd be using it whenever it's his turn to, and the ani wouldn't be able to because he can't afford to hire avadim to heat it up or whatever.
The ani could also borrow the money.
He could, if he could, fine. But we're not talking about that. We're saying if he doesn't have the ability, we don't say he has the ability to force the rich brother to buy out his portion, because we're saying even Rabbi Huda would agree, fine, because there's only good over there. There's no ogud. The ani has no ability to be able to say, well, I'll buy out your half, because the whole point is he can't afford it.
Now, just the two lines ago, the bet havat can be rented.
If it's one that can be rented. Again, location,
well,
location.
We're talking about that.
No, we're not. We're talking about it can't be rented. For whatever reason, it's not. You're not able to find anybody who's willing to rent it. It's in a bad location or whatever it is. Tashma, come, let's prove from another brisa. The general rule is like this, as far as dividing things, anything where if you divide it, you will still have, the part still has the name of the whole. Like, for example, it's a large mansion, let's say, so even you divide it in two, each one still has something worthy of being called a mansion, or the same way with a field or anything else, chokin, then one of them can force the other one to divide. The imlav, but if not, malanosa bedamim. Then what we do is we figure out the value of the one half versus the other, and it's one of them can buy the other one out, which is gudoy ogud, under another word. So there you see, there is gudoy ogud. So what is Rav Nachman saying? The answer is tanoi. You can say it's actually machlokes tanoi. The Tanya. If one of them says, toil at the shir v'ani pachos, suppose, for example, let's say you have a chatzir which is not 8 amos. So we said, unless the chatzir is 4x4 amos for each of them, then that's not enough that one can force the other one to divide it. Let's say the chatzir is only 7 amos. So let's say one of them says, toil at the shir, fine. You take the, I want to split. I don't want to be partners in it anymore. You're not going to have a full-size chatzir. Fine. You take enough for it to be a full-size chatzir. You take 4x4 amos. V'ani pachos, and I'll take less than that. So the Tanakhama says, fine, we listen to him, that's a valid claim. Okay, then in that case, the other guy will be given 4. He's willing to take 3, so that's that. Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'm in Shimon Lois. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you don't listen to him, that's not a valid claim. Now, you have to ask, Hechi Dami, what's the circumstances over here? Ilema Kintoni, are we talking about that the Braisa, we take the Braisa exactly at face value? My time is the Rav Shimon Gamliel. And what's Rav Shimon Gamliel's problem? Why shouldn't the one who's willing to take only three amas, why shouldn't he be able to say, fine, you take four, I'll take three, and that's that? Why would Rav Shimon Gamliel say that that's not a valid claim?
Cannot do anything with his cross.
He can't do it. Okay, he figures he can make some use out of it. Whatever. He can't use it as a full-fledged chaser, but fine. He's so desperate to get out of the short course that fine, he's willing to take less than a complete chaser.
What's the reason?
That's the question. Ela lav chasuri mechzera. Don't we have to say then the Braisa is evidently missing a phrase, b'hachi kama, then the Braisa would mean to say as follows. If one of them says, tolat the shir of anikachos shomen loy, if one of them says, you take four, let's say, and I'll take three, fine, that's an acceptable claim. The good ogud nami shomen loy, and here's the part that's missing from the Braisa. Also, if he says, good ogud, also if he says, fine, neither of us wants to make do with only three amas, then fine, good or good. You buy out my part, or I'll buy out your part, and then either one of us who ends up with it will have a seven amah chatzar, which is large enough to be used as a chatzar. Also, the Tanakhama seems to be saying shomen loy. The asid of Shimon Gamliel mema ain shomen loy. Then it makes sense that Shimon Gamliel said saying ain shomen loy because he doesn't agree with good or good. So there you go, then. This machlokas of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nachman might well be the same machlokas as the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The answer is loy. No, you don't have to explain the braisa that way. You don't have to say that that's what the braisa means. You don't have to say the braisa is missing any phrases. La'olam kidkotani, you could answer that the braisa means exactly what it says, that even one of them is saying, I'll take four and I'll give you three. The other one, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, said, the other one can say, I don't have to accept that. I don't have to,
and
never mind good or good. They're not dealing with the question of good or good at all. They're strictly dealing with the question of if we're going to split the seven amah chaser, and one of us is going to wind, and you're going to wind up with four, and I'm saying I'm willing to take only three. That Rav Shimon Gamliel saying that the one who's getting the four does not have to accept that. He can still say it's not big enough to split, so let's remain. Too bad. Why would Rav Shimon Gamliel say, at my time, Rav Shimon Gamliel? So you're asking, what's Rav Shimon Gamliel's reasoning? Why would he say there's a problem with that? Mishum d'omale, because the other person can answer as follows. Ibid dummy, if you're expecting that I'm going to compensate you for that financially, meaning we're going to figure, let's say the four-arm apart is worth $400, the three-arm apart is worth $300, and you're expecting, therefore, that I'm going to compensate you with $100, leslie dummy lametamach. Fine, I don't have $100 available to give to you, so that's not going to work. And if you're going to argue that you want to give it to me as a present, then matzona lenichali. I don't want a present. Dichtiv v'soyne matzona tichya. As the pasuk says, one who hates gifts will live. So I'm not obligated to accept your favors and your presents.
We don't that way.
It's mentioned. The concept soyne matzona tichya is mentioned in a few places in Chas. There is an interesting thing that some of the achronim ask the question. In that case, how do you give a poor person tzedakah? Isn't that your? So that's one answer, is that tzedakah is something that you owe him because the Eibishter put the money in your by you as a pekadim or whatever. But the other answer is there's an idea that some mafoshim develop that what's the kind of matana over here where Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying that I'm not obligated to accept it from you when you're basically doing it for your own purposes. You're not doing it out of the goodness of your heart because you want to give me a present. You're doing it because you want out of this partnership and therefore you're willing to give me more as long as. In the same way, giving tzedakah to an ani, many times a person might be doing it for ulterior motives. Now, as we learned the other day, yid can give tzedakah for ulterior motives and still considered a mitzvah. Nevertheless, it's still a different kind of matana than giving it to him purely out of the goodness.
Well, in this case, it's not a matana. I cannot talk to an excuse. I don't want to accept matana because it's not the
matana. That's what we're saying. Was he doing it for his own purposes?
So that's the point.
Right, but the so.
It's
a form of matana. In other words,
it's a deal. It's an exchange. In exchange for my freedom, that I would keep the ship, the partnership.
Fine, but I'm not obligated to accept the matana from you, which you're doing basically for your own reason. Most Rishonim, by the way, do paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel. There are the Rosh and some other Rishonim say that no, the halacha is actually like the Tanakhama, that Shomin by. Right?
Shomin.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So far we're left with then we have this machlokas Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda, and we don't have any reason to knock either one of them out yet. We still have each one has their opinion and they have what to back it up with. Not necessarily based on Tanoim, but at least yes. Okay.
I'm
going to buy a little Yosef. No. I'm going to buy a little Yosef. Hold it up, Yehuda de Shmuel. you should know that this statement that Rabbi Yehuda said, this that he's saying that we hold of good or good, it comes from Shmuel. The reason why we have to point that out, Rabbi Yehuda was originally a Talmud of Rab. Later on, he became a Talmud of Shmuel. Most of the time in Shas, we find Rabbi Yehuda saying over things in the name of Shmuel.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, though, we do sometimes find him saying things
in the Talmud of Rab.
Because afterwards, he became a Talmud of Shmuel. He learned by him a lot more. So therefore, most of what he learned, he knew from... So therefore, Abaya has to point out that you should know, we can figure out logically that this din that Rabbi Yehuda said, good or good, must be something that he learned from Shmuel.
Rav passed away
7 years before Shmuel. Yeah. Right, so that's one reason. I mean,
Talmud of Rav and Shmuel.
Rav Kuna stayed in Rav in Surah.
Well, I mean, afterwards, after Rav passed away, okay, he didn't go to Shmuel, but nevertheless, yeah. All right. Yeah.
Well, they needed a Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, that's also true. Okay, the Hodder of Yehuda de Shmuel, it's none. And how do we know that? Like this. We learned in our Mishnah, on Yud Aleph, the Kisvei HaKodesh Afri Sheshneim Rotsim Lo Yachloku, that we said, unlike anything else which they voluntarily can agree to divide, when it comes to Kisvei HaKodesh, when it comes to a scroll of Toto and Nevi Muksuvim, even if they both agree, they can't divide it. Because of the Bezoyan to it. Ve'omar Shmuel, now, here's the point. Shmuel says, Lo Shano El Bekrach Echad. This only applies if we're talking about it's one single volume, one single roll that contains in it, let's say, Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, or individual Nevi'im, or individual Uksuvim, as we'll learn soon, the question of whether you're allowed to have them all in one volume. It applies only to one volume. If they're going to take one volume and cut it in half, then it would be a bizoyah. Alva v'shnei krichas, but if it was two separate volumes, Rashi says, for example, let's say you had a Sefer Torah, and then you had separately, you had a volume of a scroll of all the Nevi'im, then yachlok, then chokin, then they're allowed to divide, then they can divide.
One
will get the other.
Yeah, but that's not the yachloku.
That is yachloku. I'm going to get only the Torah, you're going to get only the Nevi'im.
Yachloku we meant initially was to split the second Torah.
But that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. That's Shmuel's point, is that they're allowed to do that. We don't say because it's not a bazillion for the sake of Torah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Mind you, the Rabbeinu Yonah brings from the Yerushalmi that actually the Yerushalmi wants to say maybe not. Maybe even if it is two separate things, they shouldn't be allowed to split it because how are you talking? So one's going to get a Torah, Reuven's going to get a Torah, Shimon's going to get a Nevi'im. Now from now on, Shimon's not going to be able to learn Torah and Reuven's not going to be able to learn Nevi'im. Or then the Yerushalmi goes even further. Maybe even if it's two copies of the same Sefer, maybe they shouldn't split it. Let them both keep the two copies jointly, and that way they'll get together to learn it rather than each one going and then learning it on their own. But that's our Gemara doesn't hold of those concepts. Okay. So the Isak that of less din of good or good. Now, if you were going to say, like Rav Nachman is saying, that there's no din of good or good, my iri b'krach echad. So who cares whether we're talking one volume or two? Afilu b'shnei krich and nami. Even if it was two volumes, if they don't mutually agree to divide it, because in other words, it sounds like when Shmuel says chokin, b'shnei krich is chokin, we don't necessarily assume that Shmuel means if they voluntarily want to. It sounds like Shmuel is saying, even if they don't want to, even if one of them says, I want to divide it, and the other one says no, as long as it's Shnei Trichas, one of them can force the other one to divide it.
Doesn't have that to be a compensation, a money exchange?
Well, that's what good or good is. If we said there's no good or good, then even if it's in two volumes, why should one of them be able to force the division? Right. Let the other one say, the Torah is worth more than the VM. If you're going to do that, then buy out my portion. The answer is no. You can't necessarily understand Shmuel that way because Tirgum of Shalman versus Shnei and Reuven, because Rav Shalman explained that Shmuel's din is talking about when both of them mutually agree. In other words, then the chiddush is that we don't say like those things from the Yerushalmi, we don't say that one of them is going to end up with that he's missing a particular sefer to learn or that they should be learning together or whatever. But nevertheless, it's true. Shmuel may not necessarily be saying what would be the din if they don't both agree. In that case, you can't prove one way or the other what Shmuel would hold. He would be saying, if they mutually agree, as long as it's two krichas, then they can agree to divide it.
They don't have to.
But not necessarily saying that they have to agree. In other words, Shmuel may not necessarily hold of good or good. He may or may not. So you can't say, when Rabbi Yehuda said the good or good, that necessarily he's telling us a din based on what Shmuel said, not necessarily. Omer Amemer. Hilchasa is din of the good.
Are we giving it the interpretation, Tosfos?
No, this is the Gemara. This is the Gemara saying this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rashi explains it. Rashi explains what the Gemara is saying, as usual. Rashi gives the running commentary. But Amar Amema, Hilchasa is dina de gudai obri. Okay, Amema says, bottom line, the halacha is indeed like Rabbi Yehuda is saying, there is a concept of gudai obri. In any of these cases, if one of them says, you fix the price and buy it from me, or I'll fix the price and buy it from you, and we shouldn't stay partners anymore, he has the ability to force that, to force the other one to accept that.
By the way, ultimately, why was it that if you could only do one-way transaction, good and no agud, that you couldn't split it? What was the logic?
The logic is that we say there's good or agud only when either one is equally possible, but when only one is possible, not necessarily should we say that. Why should I have to sell you my portion? I may not want to sell you my portion.
Right, so the guy has to have a choice. Either I can keep everything,
or I can sell everything. Yeah.
Sell everything.
Right. There is, by the way, there is a bit of discussion among Rishonim where the concept of good or agud comes from. Is it just the takana of the Chachamim, or is it maybe based on what on the Torah itself says? Vasisa Yashav Atoy. Okay. All right.
Yashav
Atoy. Yeah. The other way of looking at it is maybe it's a variation of Kofin al Midat Sodom. Like, don't act like a person from Sodom. That you're just you're insisting on that. You're going to insist on your rights even when the other guy is suffering from it. No, you know, if it doesn't hurt you, then you should. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a bit like the name of the
Lomachot. In that sense, it would be like that, according to that way of looking.
And does that mean if it's good, any time we're partners, and I say, I want to buy you out, and then you say, well, no, I'll buy you out, but I don't, you have the choice to do it.
Yeah.
So in other words, if one partner says, I want out, the other partner gets to choose how it gets out.
It looks like it. There is that. There is.
That's why it's good. I'll do it. Right. It's not, if it's, and right. It can't be one way, because then I get to choose both things.
Yeah.
I want out, and I have to do it my way.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I get it now. Totally.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So Amema is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Hoda. I knew, what are you doing with Rabbi Nachman? You, especially usually in Dinim Amanis, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Nachman. Amalei, so Amema said, Lo Shmili. I didn't hear of what Rabbi Nachman said. Kaloima, which amounts to saying lois severely. I don't hold of it.
Hold.
I don't hold of it. Okay, the question is v'loi.
How can he not?
Why not? He's an Amora. Rav Nachman is an Amora. He's entitled to disagree with Rav Nachman.
But we know that the halach is not for
example. Usually. Every rule has exceptions. Okay. The question is v'loi. Are you telling me Amema does not hold of that din? But we find the case of Rava bar Chinina and Rabdimi bar Chinina, two brothers, Shavak l'Ravua Taute Amhasa, their father died and left to them two maidservants, two Shvachas Knanias. Chada Yada Akio Bashuli, one knew how to bake and cook, Chada Yada Pilcha Vanabla, the other one knew how to spin and weave. Or Rashi gives another explanation that she knew how to make like nice cushions for coverings for benches and things, whatever. But also the Kamei de Rava, and they came to Rava to ask, what do we do as far as the division? V'amalu les dina de gudai agud, and Rava told them there is no din of gudai agud. So which would be like Rav Nachman. So what is it? Rava is Amemo's Rebbe. We shouldn't assume without good reason that Amema goes against what his Rebbe said. So what do you mean, Loi Shmili, I never heard of any concept of less dinner to good or good? His Rebbe, Rava, evidently holds that there isn't. Yeah. The answer is, shiny hostam, it's different over there. It's not really good or good, the Lamami Boyle Tavai or Lamami Boyle Tavai, because both of them need both. You need somebody who knows their way around the kitchen, and you need somebody who knows their way around the sewing machine. But you can't. So therefore, ki ka'amalish girl at chada v'ano chada. So if either one of them were to say, you take one and I take the other, lav gudai ogud, then it's not really gudai ogud. Gudai ogud is I'm going to buy out you're going to keep one shivcha and I'll sell you the other one at a price that we fix, or vice versa. But here it wouldn't be like that.
If they just divide it,
then one of them has somebody to cook for them, but not somebody to sew for them, and vice versa. So the only way to do it, would be that they're going to keep on using these shvachas jointly on alternate days or whatever.
Yeah.
If they hire her out. Yeah, if they hire her out on a bakery, yeah, they could also share the end.
But isn't it true of any case when there's a partnership running a divider? In fact, remains that one, if you take it all or I take it all, then one of us cannot enjoy whatever we could enjoy up till
but
now.
But that's what good or good is all about. You both right.
So why shouldn't the divider be two surplus?
Because here they weren't trying to buy each other out. Here the idea was we're gonna split it to begin with. One of us will get one, and the other one will get the other.
So
good or is not relevant. Yeah.
But it's a bit like the portion that is less than what's necessary.
That's exactly the point, right? Okay, the question is, why aren't you able to say that? What about when it comes to Kisvei HaKodesh, you need a Torah, you need a Nevi'im, let's say. And yet Shmuel said that only if it's in one volume, only if it's in one roll, do you not divide it because of the bazillion of the Sefer. But if it's two separate volumes, then they can divide it. And again, we assume that chokin again means we assume like we did before that it means bal kochoi, that one of them can say I want the Torah and I'll force you to take the Nevi'im, and gudai or good as the case may be. And again, the answer is haltergemer Rav Shalman b'shiratzu. No, because we already said that Rav Shalman explained we're not talking about where one of them is trying to force the other one to divide. We're saying they mutually agreed to divide.
The halacha, by the way. So
the halacha is that there is gudai or good.
Means that
each one is not going that one or the other of them is not going to get a fully useful thing, then we can have gudai or good. One of them can force the other one. You buy me out, or I'll buy you out, and we'll have one one or the other of us will have a completely functional thing. That's what gudai or good is. Compensation. Yeah. With Kisvei HaKodesh, we're saying that if they mutually agree, Shmuel is saying if they mutually agree, the chiddush is. Given that there's no bizoyan, and Shmuel doesn't hold of those concepts that we said before about you're going to be left without a sefer that should be essential to you, or that you should be learning together, or whatever, then fine, you can then fine, they can mutually agree to divide it. But again, that doesn't show what would happen if they didn't mutually agree. Not necessarily would they be able to divide it. So you're back
so
to
it's not full good enough.
So we're saying there is a concept of good or ogud where it's relevant.
Right.
But
it's not complete.
But not when it's relevant. When not, like with the case of the two shvachos, then it's not. When one or the other of them is going to end up with something that if they divide it down the middle, one or the other of them is going to be missing something essential. Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to get into, since we talked about dividing up svarim, so now we're going to get the next daf or so is going to talk about dinim involving the writing of Tanakh. In one volume or in multiple volumes.
Before we continue, does the din of good and agud apply to other situations than shifbos and
it applies to any item that two people own in common? As there are actually some Rishonim argue that maybe it doesn't apply to certain kinds to certain kinds of properties. Metalpin, for example, yeah.
Right.
Svarim, we're saying if it was Svarim, it applies to you.
Okay.
Yeah, but okay, Svarim, we're saying it applies to you.
Sorry,
it doesn't matter. It's still metalpin. Turn it up on him. So now we're going to get into a little bit of a side discussion about the dinim of writing Sifrei Kodesh in one volume versus multiple volumes. We're going to have some of the basic dinim of writing these things, and then we're going to eventually get into some agabta about the writing of Sifrei Torah as well.
What line are you on?
Turn it up on in Madbif, about 15 lines from the bottom of your gimel on the base.
I got it.
Yeah. Okay, turn it up on him. Madbi kodem tonen avim uksuvim ke'echad divri Rav Meir. Rav Meir says a person can paste together, a person can attach together the Torah and the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim and make one gigantic volume out of all of it. Tosfos points out, the chiddush of it is, normally we know you're not allowed to put Nevi'im and Ksuvim on top of a Chumash. Now what happens over here? You have this one gigantic volume, and you're going to be rolling it. Let's say you're going to be rolling it to the section of the Torah. You're going to have much of the part of the Torah is it's a scroll. Yeah, the oldest Tvarim in those days.
Once you roll past the
Once you roll, once you roll to the part that has the Torah on it, so you're going to have, let's say, for example, so the right Eitz Chaim is going to have Bereishis and Shmoyis, let's say, on it. The other one is going to have Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Dvarim, as well as Yeshua, Shoit, and Shmuel, etc. So they're all going to be on top of the Chumash. Wouldn't that be a problem? The answer is no. Right. So the answer is, Torah says, when they're all stuck together, when they're all attached together, it's not a problem, and that's the basis, right? The halacha is such a volume though does not have the kedusha of a sefer Torah. You cannot lame from it in public.
No, you cannot.
No, even according to Reb Meir, who says that you can stick them together, you still cannot use it for public lame. You can use it for private lame.
You can't even lame the Tanakh from it.
You can lame Tanakh from it. Because
you can.
We're talking about laning from it in
Shul.
Laning in Shul. Yes,
if a Megillah was attached to it, you can.
If a Megillah
can lay
any new din,
Napoli is right. There is a din in Hilchos Megillah that if you have a complete volume of Ksuvim, or Torah Nevi'im of Ksuvim, whatever, and it contains the Megillah among them, you're not allowed to lay from that Purim, unless that Megillah's Esther portion is either shorter or longer than the rest of the scroll, so that you can see that it's a distinct thing of its own. Because otherwise, people aren't going to realize that you're laying with that Pirsum and Nissa. They're going to think, okay, you know, you're laying Tanakh every day, and today happened to be it.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But what about Haftorah? Can you learn Haftorah from the whole thing with the Chumash in it also?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it depends. That I guess, really depends on the question. Does Haftorah actually need to be read from a scroll or not? As you know, if you go to any shul, if you go to any... So if you go to any shul where they daven according to Minhag Agra, you have such shuls in there, then they do have scrolls of Nevi'im, and they actually read the Haftorah from them. But in most of the rest of the world, they don't.
And the Maggid of Ram says you should have the whole Tanakh in a safe or even print it.
Okay.
So some people read from the whole
thing. Okay.
Right?
Anyway. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so that's Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda, I'm a Torah b'fnasman, Nevi'im b'fnasman, Oksuvim b'fnasman. Rav Yehuda says, no, you have to have each one of them separately. Because, Tosfos says, the reason is because you don't want, for example, people to look at this whole gigantic thing and think it was all mipi agvura, that it was all given by Hashem to Moshe. You have to realize there is a difference between Torah and there is a difference between Nevi'im. They're on a separate level. And V'chachamim kolachad v'achad b'fnei. The Chachamim say even further, each book of Tanakh has to be written on its own. You can't even have all the Nevi'im together, let's say. And Tosfos says, same idea. You don't want, for example, that people are going to think, there's eight volumes of Nevi'im. You don't want people to think that they were all said by they were all written by one Navi. They weren't, as we'll learn later on, tomorrow. We'll learn about who wrote each of the Sfarim. So therefore, they have to be distinct. The Chumash, in other words, all five Chumashim were dictated by the Eved to Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, those all belong together. Whereas Nevi'im, then, so of him, they're saying that.
So that's logic would apply to print.
Maybe.
Print all of Tanakh together, what's the difference?
Maybe. I don't know. The Halacha is not like the Chumash. The Halacha is like Rabbeinu. Yeah. Okay. The Amr of Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, I can prove to you that you're allowed to have all the Nevi'im together. Maisa b'baisus ben zunin, it happened that baisus ben zunin was a balabas in the times of Rabbi Gamliel, and we have him in a number of places in Shas. Shahoyla shmoina Nevi'im b'dvachim techad api Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. He had a volume of all eight Nevi'im, Yeshua, Shoitim, Shmuel, Malachim, Yeshaya, Yirmi, Yechezkel, and Trey Arthur, all in one big roll. Alpi Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and that was based on that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah told him he can do that. So you see, you can have all eight Nevi'im together. No, he didn't have all eight of them in one big volume. He actually had eight separate rolls of the eight separate Nevi'im.
What did Baisus do last Masechta? What was the story with him?
We had with him that he used to do also Sadeo Mecher, that he did an arrangement with people that he lent money to as far as a mashkanta, that in a way that was mutar al-fi halacha without having problems of ribis. In Psachim, you have the din about matzahs with decorations on them or whatever. Yeah, yeah. There's a bunch of places in Shas where he shows up. Yeah. Okay. Omer Rebbe, Ma'aseh Ve'Evi'u L'Chaneinu Torah Nevi'im Uksavim U'Dvarim Kachad. So Rebbe says, as a matter of fact, it once happened, they brought us one of these large volumes that had Torah Nevi'im and Uksavim all stuck together. V'Hechshanim, and we said that such a thing is kosher to learn from. Again, not kosher to use in Shul, but not to learn from in Shul, but to learn from. Now, some dinim about writing, when you're writing a Sefer Torah, or when you're writing a volume like that of Nevi'im or Ksuvim. The rules are like this. Bein chumash l'chumash shal Torah abba shikin. Between one chumash and the next, in the Torah, you have to have four blank lines. If you see it in a Sefer Torah nowadays, you always see that. Four blank lines. So you have, in other words, after, for example, after Chumash Bereishis, by Yisim Ba'odin B'Mitzrayim, blank line 1, 2, 3, 4, and then on the fifth line, the Elishma.
Enter.
Yeah. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that this is the Loiv and the Elyon. This is like you have a level of Chachma of the Eibishter, which is a Todas, Chachmasa, Return of Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, that's higher even than being able to get down into words, and therefore it just shows up as blank parchment. Yeah. Okay. V'chein ben kol navi v'navi, the same between one navi and the next. Oh, if you're writing Nevi'im in one volume, like Rameyer and Rav Yehuda say you can, then you have four blank lines between one navi and the next. Over navi, shal shnei maser gimel shikin. When it comes to Trei Aser, which is the nevuos of 12 separate Nevi'im, which are all put together in one book, as the Gemara was, we'll learn tomorrow in the Gemara, because they're small and the Chachamim were afraid they might get lost or overlooked or whatever. But since they're on the one hand, they're one sefer of the 24 books of Tanakh. On the other hand, they were written by 12 separate Nevi'im. You also need space between one and the next, but only three lines, rather than four. The Rambam has a different girsa, by the way. The Rambam has a girsa that, no, what the Gemara is saying over here is between one Chumash and the next, you need four blank lines. But between one Navi and the next, whether the large Nevi'im or the small Nevi'im, three lines. So according to the Rambam, in other words, you have three blank lines, let's say, between Yeshua and Shoftim, three between Shoftim and Shmuel, and so forth, and also three between Hosea and Yoel, and between Yoel and Amos, and so forth, with the rest of the three between each Navi, according to the Rambam.
So this brings up a difference in controversial opinion that you can put the Nevi'im into one.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it contradicts the Chacham, obviously. Now, you can also finish one at the end of the page, at the end of a column, and start the next one at the top of the column. Which means, there's a lot of different explanations of what this means.
Without making a space?
So that's how Rashi learns. It means that, for example, if you had, let's say you finished writing Sefer Yehoshua, and it happened to be at the end of a column, you do not have to leave the four blank lines before Shoftim. You can begin Shoftim immediately at the top of the next column, as long as it's on the next column. Tosfos says that doesn't, first of all, that doesn't apply to Chumashim. Chumashim, you always have to leave the four blank lines regardless.
Even
if it's on top of the page, it seems, yeah. Tosfos gives another explanation from the Ritzva, that it means that when it comes to the Nevi'im, you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to finish one Navi at the bottom of a column and then leave the blank space at the top of the next column and continue from there. With Chumashim, according to the Ritzva, you're not allowed to do that at all. You always have to make sure that the four blank lines are in the middle of a page. Or somewhere, not in the middle necessarily, but somewhere, not at the top and not at the bottom. Not at the top and not at the bottom. Because the logic is, because Nevi'im, you're allowed to cut apart. Ultimately, even according to the Meir and Rav Yehuda, that you're allowed to have all the Nevi'im, or all the Torah Nevi'im, or Ksuvim, or whatever, in one volume, you are allowed to cut them apart into separate Svarim. Which, Tosfos says, by the way, you're not allowed to when you're just doing it in order to divide it between two people. That would be a bazillion. But if you're cutting it apart, because let's say, for example, right now, all I need is a Sefer Yehoshua, I don't need a Sefer Shoftim right now, that's legitimate. However, with a Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to do that. To cut it apart as a separate Chumashim would take away the Kedusha of it, the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah.
It
makes it that it's not a kosher of Sefer Torah anymore. Therefore, you have to make sure to write a Sefer Torah in such a way that the four blank lines, that is always in the middle of a column, that way there won't be any possibility of cutting it apart. That's how Tosfos learns. That's how the Ritzvah learns in Tosfos. Yeah.
Another interesting twist I just thought of is if it's Nevi'im, where even if it doesn't end all the way at the end, but it ends one line at the end, you decide it could start at the beginning.
According to Rashi's explanation, that's what I mean.
One line.
Because
it's a new column.
Because the new column, exactly. There's other explanations also. Rabbeinu Gershom seems to understand that it means fakir, that when you're writing Nevi'im, regardless where you end the Sefer, you should always start the next Sefer at the top of a new column. Again, with the logic, because if you want to cut them apart, you should have the ability to do that. Whereas with Chumash, since you can't cut them apart, then don't do that. We learn in a Braisa, another din in this connection. If somebody wants to put together one large roll of Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, which Rameyer says that you can do, Medabik, he can do that, like Rameyer says. He has to leave enough blank parchment at the beginning of it to be able to roll onto an Eitz Chaim, onto a pole. So you have exactly what it sounds like. You have a pole at the beginning of the Sefer,
right.
You have a pole at the beginning of the sefer, like we have Atei Chaim on a Torah.
Right.
So you need enough blank parchment at the beginning of it to go around the circumference of that roll before you start writing the first column.
One turn.
And the logic behind it, Mepharshim say, is because otherwise, if you write anything in that space, and it's going to rub against the Atei Chaim, and it'll get rubbed out. Yeah.
Very practical.
Yeah. Well, the sefer could log all hecker. At the end
and
of it,
you won't see it.
No. The point is, think of like, for example, when they're learning Parshas Bereishis, when they start learning on Simchas Torah, you have the beginning of the class is sewn onto the Eitz Chaim.
That's right.
But you don't have, when they start learning over there, part of the Eitz Chaim is exposed. You have over there, it's part of the length of it. It's not, the whole length of it is not, the whole circumference of it, I mean, is not covered with class. You could have, let's say, for example, you know, let's say this is the Eitz Chaim over here. You could have, for example, that you find, you know, the class goes around over here, let's say,
right.
And this part is exposed.
Right.
You could theoretically have written something beginning over here already, and it would be visible. But the problem is, when you rolled it up and it touched the wood of the Eitz Chaim,
right.
It would get rubbed out. Yeah. That's what we're saying. You need that blank space there. Or the sefer could log all hefet. At the end of the volume, you need enough parchment to be able to roll around the entire volume. So not to roll around the Eitz Chaim, but to roll around the entire volume.
The entire volume,
in other words, if it's rolled up like this, eventually the circumference of it is, let's say, 10 tefachim around. So you need 10 tefachim of blank parchment at the end.
To cover the whole thing.
To go around the whole thing, right, in order like to protect it from getting damaged or whatever. So Rashi explains that on the basis of, it seems that what you're doing is you're keeping the Sefer Torah rolled to the end. And therefore, you need that amount at the end to roll around the whole thing. So Tosfos asks, since when do you roll the Sefer Torah to the end? Usually, if anything, you would roll it to the beginning.
Right.
So Tosfos brings up various other possibilities. That one is that we're talking about over here. We're talking about one large volume of Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim. Now, if it was just Torah, you would have two Atei Chaim on it. And therefore, as we'll learn later on, as the Gemara itself will say in a few lines, that with a Sefer Torah, you leave it rolled wherever you finish laning from it last.
Right.
With Nevi'im Ksuvim, though, you don't. You generally roll them to the beginning. But on the other hand, if you have one big volume of Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, you would have a problem with that. If you did it that way, if you rolled it like that, then you would have the Torah is going to be wrapped around the Nevi'im Ksuvim. It's almost like what? The Nevi'im Ksuvim are more important than the Torah is just there as protection for it.
Right.
Therefore, that would be the case where you want to put one Eitz Chaim at the beginning, and that way you're always forced to roll it to there, and that way the Torah is on the inside, closer to the Eitz Chaim, and the Nevi'im Ksuvim are around it, protecting it. And that's the logic why to have that blank parchment at the end of it to wrap around it. Okay. Tosfos brings us maybe other gersos also. Okay. Anyway, yeah.
How about the top and bottom?
So top and bottom is top and the margins on the top and bottom are discussed elsewhere. Those are discussed in the Gemara and Menachem.
And always get
a little bent in. Yeah. Thank you. Or Messiah Milamato, you finish one book at the bottom of a column and begin the new one at the top. And if you want to cut it apart, then you can cut it apart. The question is my comment. What do you mean, if you want to? Even Reb Meir, who says you can have them all in one volume, agrees it's better to have a separate volume of Yeshua and a separate one of Shoftim and so forth. What do you mean, if you wanted to cut them apart like the Diyavid? Halkama means She'im Bolachta Chotzeh. The reason why you should have that you begin the new Sefer at the top of a new column, so that if you want to cut it apart, if at some later time you decide you want a separate Yeshua and a separate Shoftim, you'll be able to, because you'll be able to cut it between columns. It's on the top, right? The Gemara says, okay, Uramini, however, you're telling me this Braisa was just saying that you have only one Eitz Chaim, and you make at the beginning again enough parchment to roll around the Eitz Chaim, and at the end you need enough parchment to go around the entire thing. However, Uramini, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Tchila Sefer v'Sefer k'dei logu, the beginning of a Sefer and the end of it, you need enough to roll. Now, that's what we have to figure out. K'dei logo mai, we assume k'dei logo means a certain fixed amount. So how much do we mean? E k'dei logo omud, do we mean as much as it takes to wrap around the Eitz Chaim? Kasha hefet. What about, we said before, the previous braisa says at the end you need more than that. You need enough to go around the entire volume. E k'dei logo hekef, and if you mean that at both ends, you need enough to wrap around the entire volume. Kasha omud. But the previous braisa said at the beginning you only need enough to go around the Eitz Chaim one time. So what is it? So Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, you're right. The Braisa just says kedei logul, but it doesn't mean to specify what the exact amount logul is. It means the respective amount logul in the two places. At the beginning, it means one amount, and at the end, it means a different amount. Lutzdodin, it's like to the side. One part, what it's one is logul to go around the eight, and one is how much is necessary to go around the other. Rav Ashi says, no, that's not what it is. Kitanyahi b'sefer Torah. No, this last braisa that we just quoted is talking about a sefer Torah. The previous one was talking about Nevi'im uksuvim, or one big scroll that has Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim in it, or whatever, where then you only have one eighth time. And it's rolled to the beginning. You were talking only a sefer Torah, Kitani, as we learned in a braisa. Kol ha'sforim niglolim etchilosim l'sefer. Any other sefer, you roll from the beginning to the end. You store them in other one. You're storing them away. You store them rolled to the end. The Sefer Torah Nigla Lemsi, say where the Sefer Torah is left rolled in the middle, meaning wherever you finished laning last. The Oisalei Amud Eilach Eilach, and you make for it an Amud, an Eitz Chaim on both ends. The logic of it is, Mephoshim say, because the other Sfarim are not necessarily used as often. You roll it to the end, okay, so then when you need to lane from it, you'll roll it open to where you need to. A Sefer Torah is used to lane the Tzibur. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have that each time you're going to roll it to one end or the other, and then it's going to be tircha de tzibura to roll it. Think of how it is in shul all the time. That's that way. I have two or three different tirchas that you went on certain times. Right. So therefore, you keep it rolled to the last place where you finish, lem to ise, wherever it happens to be, and therefore you need two atichayim. Amar Rav Elazar, Rav Sada, kacha you kosmin, kosve svarim, shibir shalayim, osim tifreim. You should know that the sofrim in Yerushalayim, for the Churban, obviously, used to make their sifre Torah that way, that it was that with an Eitz Chaim on each end, like we make our sifre Torah nowadays. Yeah.
How would you, let's say you have a big sefer here, it's huge, and you're going to open up to something in the middle, what would you do with everything that's going on this way?
I don't understand what you mean.
Let's say you want to go into the middle of the Tanakh, mm-hmm. and you only have one Eitz Chaim. Where do you put all of the other parts?
Oh, roll without Eitz Chaim.
Yeah, it's like
you just roll it without
an Eitz Chaim. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, we'll stop over here and we'll continue tomorrow with more dinim of the Sefer Torah. But there is, by the way, there is a bit of discussion among Achronim. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch and it's brought in the Noisa Kalim and so forth in this connection. So we know a Sefer Torah has one eighth time. What about a Megillah Esther? The only other thing which we know has dinim of how it's supposed to be written. So technically, according to what we're saying over here in our Gemara, it should have one eighth time. However, there are Mephoshim who say there are Rishonim who learn that no, we're saying with Sfarim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, you don't necessarily need any Atzei Chaim at all. And so you can find in museums and whatnot, you can find old style Megillahs from hundreds of years ago that had one, fancy illuminated one that had one Atzei Chaim, but our run of the mill Megillahs don't have any.
Because you read it from the beginning to the end.
And you read it from the beginning to the end. Well, there's also, in the case of Megillah, another reason is because you don't read it rolled up anyway. You fold it out, you unfold it, and spread it out like a Gedarus anyway, right. Right, but even when you're rolling it up, you don't need an Eitz Chaim necessarily to roll it around. You can roll it up without that.
Shane's purchased one set of Torah's Eitz Chaim. It's square. It's not round.
Interesting.
It has a thing, and you're going to give it a pull. It goes and goes and goes.
So
until you stop it. It's very good bearing. So, we have to go to the Torah to Machayah. It's really funny. Because I thought it's weird. So what's the idea? You don't roll. And we went to give a pull and you'll go.
So, swinging it like?
It's spring. It's a very good bearing. It's a very good bearing system.
Interesting.
The cross section
of it is square.
The round part is not square. It's very straight. It shouldn't roll to stay like that.
Interesting.
When you go around part, it's low.
So theoretically, for Sfarim and Nevi'im Uksuvim, you need one eighth chaim. Right, so according to that, it would be you put an eighth chaim at the end, and then you'd unroll it, and then when you roll it back up, you roll it on that eighth chaim at the end. We're saying that.
You need to always leave it
where you last played. Right, so you need two, exactly.